Betwixt the Veil, Episode 2. In Paddington Station, at the entry to Platform 7, a pretty young woman in her early 20s, wearing a plain gray hoodie, black t-shirt, tight but flexible blue jeans and sneakers, leaned against one of the large studded pillars. They stood in rows like sterile white trees looming over the tracks. She was of average height with long, curly, dark brown hair tied back in a ponytail, soft, rounded facial features, emerald eyes that twinkled like distant constellations, and a subtly dimpled smile that spoke of mischief and laughter. Gemma leaned there, admiring the resplendent architecture of the rail station. From its high, vaulted, wrought-iron arches like the ribs of a slumbering creature of myth, breathing in the light through the splendid glass panels glimmering in the gloomy late spring of London's haze, to the mismatched floor tiles rippling in the dappled sunlight like scales of a snake smoothed by ages of passing feet. These things were the facade of a nation that once took great pride in its grandeur and splendor, yet now were only whispers of an age long past. Gemma often chose this spot, on the now mostly empty platform, for more reasons than one. Firstly, she found it to be a wonderful place to contemplate and organize her thoughts, allowing her to calm her nerves and collect her senses before the storm. Secondly, to take in the magnificent majesty of the station, and thirdly, to her greater purpose. She mainly chose this track due to her rather nefarious calling as a light-fingered cut-purse and a notorious grifter, at least in the thoughts of those that work within the shadows. She closed her eyes and breathed in the musty scents and clamorous sounds of the station. She allowed their impressions to linger like an ethereal blueprint. As the wind gusted from outside, she could distinguish the creosote, hot-rolled steel, dusty gravel, and concrete that blew up the tracks. She could smell the oil and grease from the axle box as a train squeaked and squealed, shuddering to a halt two tracks over. Through the cacophony of sounds and smells came the abrupt announcement over the PA that the Heathrow Express would be arriving in 5 minutes. She could easily pick out a baby crying by the information center several paces behind her, a worried mother doing her best to soothe what Gemma thought was a newborn due to the smell of breast milk and the sour scent of sick that wafted from the child. She sensed a man in front of her, approximately 50 paces down the platform, talking in a brusque Doric brogue into his mobile phone. By the sound of his accent, he was from northeastern Scotland, very likely Aberdeen. By his conversation, the thick smell of cologne, shoe polish, and moderate use of starch, she could tell he was a businessman and clearly distraught with whoever was on the other end. She could easily pick out the ever-pervasive smell of greasy fried things and wannabe food that were sold at the McDonald's six tracks over, neatly nestled by the paper chase kiosk. This, combined with the many other smells and sounds all around her, crystallized into a perfect vision of the station. The quickest exits, security posts and patrol routes, and easy distractions to use in case of an emergency. To be honest, it had been years since she attracted even mild attention or was even slightly noticed in her swift, smooth purloining of purses and pilfering of marks. She might even say she had reached something of a mastery. Yet this was not her purpose today. Over the last 2 years, she had been honing a very particular skill, one that would allow her to blend in and out of crowds, appearing to people to be exactly what she wanted them to see, an unassuming girl going about her business and unworthy of any attention. In the right settings, mostly at night or in the thick of a crowd, she could vanish completely. This skill was still rather new to her and had by no means mastered it, which was actually the reason why she was standing here on Platform 7 awaiting the 11:32 a.m. Heathrow Express. It had been 2 weeks ago to the day that she had been approached by one of her special acquaintances about a very particular job, one suited to her specific skill set. He had informed her they would be running a con that would require a partner. She was to approach a certain gentleman by the name of Keith Jennings at the Savoy Hotel that Sunday night. She was to charm, seduce, and locate a particular thumb drive with proprietary information on it. This seemed to Gemma like an easy grift to pull on such an unassuming Mark. Seeing as she had never run any grifts at the Savoy, she would not likely be recognized by any of the staff. Her special acquaintance, Reggie, had told her if she was willing to do the job, he would meet with her and her chosen partner the following afternoon. Gemma's confidence in her skills and the pay being what it was, she had easily accepted. She went home to her two-bedroom flat in Camden and explained the job to her younger sister, Tara. Gemma and Tara had literally grown up as thick as thieves, a bond forged in the trials of their youth from the lanes of Skryne to the streets of Dublin. Their trust was absolute. They were almost like twins in that their thoughts would often run parallel to each other and their actions were frequently in sync. With very little persuasion and a brief conversation about what to ask on the morrow, Tara had easily agreed to meet with Reggie. Gemma texted Reggie, confirming that she and her sister were willing to meet and formulate the plan. An hour later, Reggie responded and confirmed they could meet in Bexley at 1 p.m. at the Abbeywood station and walk from there. The next day, Gemma and Tara put on their most unobtrusive clothing, jeans, hoodies, and sneakers, grabbed a small rucksack with food, water, mace, and twin knives. Both girls tucked the latter into their sheaths at their waistlines and under their hoodies. The girls were no stranger to the wandering eyes and lecherous attitudes of some men and the roughness of the neighborhood they were meeting in. Reggie generally liked to meet at a few rather less than reputable locations throughout Southwark, Lewisham, Greenwich, and Bexley. She assumed because he lived in southeast London. The rough streets of the city were familiar to the sisters and had many years ago learned how to handle themselves. Gemma had just last year attained her black belt and Tara her brown belt. Their father, being the kind of man that he was and in the line of work that he did, thought it prudent that the girls learned how to protect themselves. So when Gemma was 8, her father had enrolled her in Krav Maga classes, and 2 years later, when Tara was 8, had done the same. As they came out of the Abbeywood station, they found Reggie already waiting for them, clad in his well-worn navy peacoat, brown workman trousers, black boots, and his signature black bowler cap, what some may call a proper geezer. His face looked as though a meat tenderizer had been taken to it several times over the decades, with skin that hung loose like a wrung-out udder, to his nose that was as crooked as a bent nail. Probably due to the many times it had been pounded in over the years, and the unsurprising slant of his jaw like that of a partially opened can. He smiled at the two girls like a lazy jackal and motioned for them to follow. Gemma had met Reggie through one of their mutual acquaintances about a year ago at one of the two fey pubs in London, the Gnarly Gnome. The other pub was called the Naughty Nymph. Fae are known well for their love of alliteration. Pubs such as these could only be found by fae folk and were often not where you would expect them to be, or unexpectedly they were where you wanted them to be. You have to know what you're looking for, because they are held delicately betwixt the veil. Almost like the shimmer of a mirage, and only fae folk and the like can catch sight of the glimmer and enter. The Gnarly Gnome's front door was located just off of St. Pancras Way, right across from the St. Pancras Hospital in Camden. It was where the Elephant and Castle once stood. Well, actually still stood, but not seen by the common eye. In truth, it was purchased right after the Second World War and was supposedly demolished, but was actually enchanted, hidden, and renovated by its new owner, the dwarf Bartholomew Burke. The back door opened into a copse of trees on the south side of the Penn Ponds in Richmond Park, for it was said that Bartholomew had a fondness for that place. Reggie had caught word that Gemma had recently moved to town, was a multi-talented grifter, and was capable of fey shadow magic and glamour and charm skills to boot. Reggie had been looking for someone just like her for some time. so he had asked their acquaintance to set up a meeting with this tough-talking Irish half-blood lass. Since then, Gemma had completed 5 jobs for Reggie, with mostly no issues. As they approached their destination, they passed a commons on their right, where a tethered horse was placidly grazing. Reggie pointed to it and said,
"Ha! Now that there's an idea. You never do need to cut the grass now, innit?"
Gemma and Tara smirked and pushed in through the front door, entering a seedy, squat, dimly lit pub called the Barge Pole, attached to a drabby, new brutalist-style council estate. This style of building always depressed Gemma, reminding her of prisons, and in some ways, they were. The smell of sour beer, cigarette smoke, and sweat hung rudely in the air. This wasn't one of the spots Gemma had been to before, but smelled and looked like many others that Reggie liked to frequent. They passed the bar on their right, and Reggie gave a knowing nod to the rough, gnarled-looking man wiping down the counter, who returned it in kind. Gemma always thought that Reggie had some kind of arrangement with the owners of each pub they met at, for they were never disturbed, and there was always a vacant booth or table away from the patrons conveniently available. With that, Reggie led the girls to the far corner booth, vacantly awaiting their arrival. The girls sat with their backs to the wall, the rucksack between them, facing the entrance with an exit route near at hand. As a rule, Gemma and Tara were generally very cautious when entering new places. They were not keen on letting people get the drop on them, and their position offered a place of vantage if needing to suddenly extricate themselves. Reggie sat across from them and eyed both with a lopsided grin and said,
"Gemma, darling, you never told me you had a sister."
Gemma fixed him with a withering gaze and said,
"You never had any jobs for me that needed a partner, nor was it none of your business."
Reggie smirked knowingly, as if only expecting such a response.
"Well then, straight to business as usual."
He quickly glanced around the room, lowered his voice, and leaned forward and in a more conspiratorial tone said,
"So, there's been a few details that have come to light about the mark that I think will make this job a fair bit easier. I've heard through an acquaintance of mine that our gentleman staying this Sunday at the Savoy has ordered out for an high-priced lady of the night. I was able to convince my acquaintance that I had just the girl for him."
Reggie leaned back and winked at Gemma. She glared back at him with a none-too-pleased look, but nodded her head, leaned forward, and said,
"Well, that certainly will make one step at this job a fair bit easier. Now I don't have to come up with any fancy ways of catching his eye or the like. All the same, Tara and I talked it over last night, and we have some questions that need an answering."
Gemma looked at Tara, who nodded her silent assent to continue.
"Firstly, what kind of man is our gentleman Jennings? Is he the type to get a few drinks at him and chat the night away, or is he more inclined after a few to take a ride in Ireland?"
She stopped briefly and gave Reggie a knowing wink. Gemma, up to this point, had never slept with any of her marks and had no intention of doing so. Catching the meaning, he said,
"From what I've been told, he's more the talkative, self-involved types, if you know what I mean. You should be able to keep the conversation light and focused on how well-to-do and how important he is. You'll like that."
He finished with a firm nod. Gemma leaned back and said,
"Well then, on to the next. Will he be traveling with any private security or keepers that we should be aware of?"
Reggie shook his head and said,
"He's an important type, but not important enough to warrant any kind of protection, at least from what my sources tell me."
Gemma frowned, and Tara shifted in her seat with uncertainty and said,
"From what I've heard say of the last job, there were some details lacking from your so-called source."
She said with emphasis on source. She was referring to the last job Gemma had done for Reggie, which had not gone according to plan. It almost ended up with Gemma in the hands of some unsavory types. But due to her skills and wits, she was able to remedy the situation with reasonable ease. Reggie crossed his arms and said,
"Well, that wasn't my fault now, was it? How was I to know they put a tracking spell in the suitcase?"
Gemma grunted and rolled her eyes and said,
"Precisely. How do you know whether or not he has someone or someone's babysitting him? And you're lucky that I'm quick on my feet and realise I've been tracked and switched out the suitcase. Still, those rather nasty-looking lads got their grubby paws on me. They certainly learned their lesson, though.
She finished with a satisfied nod and fixed Reggie with a glare that could kill. Those nasty-looking lads were actually two rather large orcish thugs that had cornered her in an alley. They thought they could get the drop on her, yet were sorely mistaken when she dispatched both in less than 20 seconds. Without even breaking a sweat, Reggie shot her a look of wounded indignance and said,
"Well, that's just it, love. I ain't using that contact ever again. And that be precisely why I hire you for these kind of jobs now, isn't it? I know all too well how you can handle yourself, love."
Reggie had actually seen firsthand just how well she could handle herself. For it had been the day that they had met at the illustrious Gnarly Gnome. An overly confident half-elf lad sitting with his friends had the gall and liquid courage enough to swat at a rump while passing him on her way to the bar. As his hand shot out, she caught it midair, placed her other hand on his elbow, and applied leverage to his shoulder and wrist, causing him to stumble out of his seat and kneel at her feet. Completely taken off guard, rosy embarrassment blossomed on his cheeks, and a pained expression etched itself across his pretty little elf face. She then made the young lad apologize and promise to keep his hands to himself. He stammered out his apology and promise in a snap, for only then did Gemma release his hand and allow him to tend to his injured wrist and his wounded pride. The entire pub, including his friends, had roared with laughter at the incident. That was actually the moment Reggie knew he and Gemma would work well together. Gemma tilted her head while considering what Reggie had just said, smiled as if likely recalling just that event, and nodded her head. Tara crossed her arms, glared scathingly at Reggie, and said,
"Just you be certain there nay be any surprises."
With that, she looked back to Gemma, who nodded with satisfaction, and continued,
"Now, what exactly does this thumb drive look like, and where should I expect to find it? And how long will it take to upload the information, and what is it that we're to be absconding with?"
Reggie vacillated in his seat, tapped his chin, considering how to respond, and said,
"Well, the thumb drive will be found in a very nifty, sleek, black lead-lined case with his company logo on it."
With that, Reggie pulled out a piece of paper with a logo in question on it and a picture of Gentleman Jennings himself. He proffered the paper to Gemma, who looked it over with a scrupulous gaze. The logo was simple, with the name Bear running vertically and horizontally, both sharing the Y and fixed within a circle. Gemma recognized the company logo. She believed it to be the number one leading pharmaceutical and life science company in the world. Tara nodded in recognition as she arrived at the same conclusion. This satisfied the two sisters, for they had no qualms in taking advantage of these affluent types. The picture was a headshot of the gentleman in question. He was a striking man with angular facial features, with a proudly prominent nose and a chin as sharp as a razor. His lips thin and unrelentingly dour, his eyes haughty but determined, they peered through jagged eyebrows that could hold a person's gaze like a deer caught in headlights. These eyes clearly demanded, nay, commanded one's attention. Some may consider him handsome and proud, but Gemma thought him too severe, cunning, austere, calculating, and concise. Yet somehow, like glacial ice, cold, hard, and unforgiving, chills ran up and down her spine just looking into those eyes. She could see that he was well-cultured and confident, but there was a glint in his eyes that spoke of violence. Like a falcon perched peering down upon its prey. Someone who would exact retribution on any and all who crossed him. Suddenly, Gemma shuddered as she realized she had faded into her true sight. A sense that when she looked upon someone, whether in person or through a picture, she could glimpse deeper into the knowing of them and find fractions of truth. a scattering of details, impressions of personality, imprints of their thoughts, glowing like fractured pieces of an individual's consciousness, shimmering in her mind's eye. Occasionally, when in close proximity, she could peer into their memories or even hear their thoughts. The latter not that often, and she generally had to be in direct contact, but the former being something she did frequently when first learning about her marks. Gemma glanced at her sister with a knowing look, and without a word, Tara understood, crossed her arms, and nodded. This particular ability she didn't tell many about, for the obvious reason being that most people would likely feel unnerved if they knew their thoughts could be read. Also, it taxed her mental and spiritual energy, leaving her feeling momentarily scattered, dazed, distracted, disoriented, or delirious. As you can imagine, that would be a vulnerability you don't go around telling people about, especially in her chosen profession. Weakness is the prey that lures those with bolder aspirations. Momentarily disquieted, Gemma shook off the feeling and handed the paper back to Reggie, who frowned with a knowing look and spirited away into one of his voluminous pockets. Reggie had suspicions that Gemma was not what she appeared to be. She only needed to see something once and could remember every detail of the information or image as if it were emblazoned into her mind. He also noticed the subtle moments after one of Gemma's true visions, where she would go rigid and could sense her energy field fluctuate drastically. Reggie was not without his own talents of observation and deductive reasoning. He also had the ability to sense wielders' source energy and overall capacity. From what he had seen of Gemma, her known abilities, and what he knew of her capacity, she was performing far under her capability. Her potential was beyond that of any wielder Reggie had seen in ages, almost as if she were a full-blood descendant of the Tuatha De Danann. He knew that couldn't be true, for those lines had been extinct for millennia. Reggie adjusted his hat and straightened his coat, giving Gemma a moment to compose herself and continue.
This is where things get a bit tricky, love. The black case and all to be found within it will likely be in the room safe or potentially stowed about his person. He seems at times to think that's a safe place for it. Either way, my acquaintance guarantees that this device is within his possession, for that object is precisely why he's here. Our gentleman Jennings is attempting to sell that information to another interested party.
He leaned forward with intensity.
Keep this well in mind. My acquaintance explicitly requested that none of us ought to know who the client actually is.
Reggie sat up, raising to his full stature, and placed both hands on the table, palms down. His intensity rising, the crook of his jaw and the set of his face cast a haunting expression, like a revenant staring into its mortal reflection.
We are not to know what's on the thumb drive, who the other interested party is, and most importantly, we cannot and shall not ever let it come to Keith Jennings' attention that anything's amiss.
He stared hard into both girls' eyes to clarify the importance of his statement. Just like a flip of a coin, Reggie cheered up as if night turned to day and he was back to his ruddy disposition. His eyes softened and his smile like a jackal split across his face. He leaned back into the booth and said,
"As far as uploading the information from the drawer to the computer, we're looking at no more than 10 minutes. Oh, there's one more thing. The black lead lined case can't be opened without our gentleman's thumbprint. So somewhere throughout the evening, you need to find a way to snag a clean fingerprint of his to gain access to the drive. Make no mistake, for our now mutual acquaintance has requested you by name. He has heard on the wind that there is no one better suited for this job."
Gemma smirked, thinking it was likely Reggie blowing up that wind of rumor and gusting it to the proper ears like a storm. Yet Gemma was suspicious of their innominent client and his unsettling request.
"How is it that you don't know who the client is?" Gemma asked. "You clearly have all this information, and it bloody well knows me by name. Doesn't all this seem a bit off? Have you ever received any jobs from this anonymous client of ours?
Reggie nodded gravely and frowned.
Well, to be honest, I haven't done any anonymous requests before. As you're well aware, I like to know who and what I'm dealing with. All the same, I do trust my go-between, a reputable sort I've worked with for several decades without incident. Also, seeing as the payment is what it is, and that he asked for you by name, I thought we could give our mysterious acquaintance some leniency, don't you think?
Reggie raised his eyebrows as if the price alone should grant the anonymity of their client. Tara didn't say anything, but Gemma could tell by the way she glared at Reggie that she was uncomfortable with all the variables. Yet Gemma knew one thing that would certainly settle her sister's mind, so she asked.
Well, seeing as there's a lot of unknown factors and odd circumstances, we're going to need to ask for half the payment up front and half upon completion. We're taking an unprecedented chance here, and we would like to assure that things are in hand if all gets bang-jaxed.
Reggie only nodded his head and said,
Our client thought that would be the case.
Reggie reached into one of his many pockets and pulled out a large packet and passed it under the table to Gemma, who in turn handed it to Tara, who slipped it into their rucksack, smiled with a satisfied grin, and said,
Well, that certainly puts things more in place.
With that, the three of them put their heads together to puzzle out the plot and finer details of their iniquitous plan. Night was quickly approaching as they finalized the details of their scheme. Gemma and Tara bid Reggie a good night. He returned it and was ordering a pint at the bar when they made their way out. As they exited, they gasped in a relieved breath of air. Gemma and Tara had to dampen their olfactory senses, for they were so deftly attuned they would have been gagging hours ago from the sheer brutal stench of the place. Both were pleased to be leaving such a putrid cesspit behind and headed home. The air was cool, for spring still held its grasp on the city. The usual light sprinkle started coming down on them as they passed the horse still grazing in the commons and out onto the street. Just as the sisters were about to turn down the road and head towards the station, Gemma caught a glimpse of movement back down the way they had come. He shifted oddly into sight from out of the corner of her eye. A man hunched over in a dark coat, or perhaps a cloak by the way it fluttered in the breeze. He stood smoking a cig, almost too casually ignoring their presence. Gemma couldn't make out any facial features, for his face was obscured in the ever-pressing shadow, hiding just out of sight of the dim light that shone from the pub. As he took a drag from his cig, he pointedly glanced their direction. The glow lit up hard creases hidden under a fedora, not enough to distinguish facial features, but enough that Gemma could sense a foreboding emanating from him. As if he stood within tumultuous shadows, like a subdued tempest over a sea, quiet but looming with intent. Like that of a graveyard covered in a thick blanket of fog, where those that are dead may not all be at rest. Just like that, Tara had turned back to see what kept Gemma, who momentarily glanced to her sister, but when Gemma looked back, the man was gone. As if the shadow he was wrapped within swallowed him into its embrace. Tara glanced at her sister questioningly, but Gemma just shook her head. As if even the memory of him seemed like her imagination. Like even the thought of him was not real, and as she motioned Tara to lead on, she felt the thought of him slip from her mind like slick silk sheets cascading off bare skin. She just chalked it up to her senses playing tricks on her, but couldn't quite shake it as they made their way south to the station. All of a sudden, the rain went from a trickle to a deluge. Gemma turned to her sister and said,
There's a spot up ahead in a Sainsbury's parking garage where we can wait out the worst of it.
Tara just nodded her assent, and Gemma led them to a roundabout and veered right off down the road toward the Sainsbury's covered parking structure. Just as they turned off the roundabout, Gemma sensed their presence, and Tara looked back to see they were not alone. There were three men following them, but at a distance. As to what their intentions were, was yet unknown. Without a word, Gemma led Tara into the parking lot and towards the covered garage and lorry loading zone. Gemma slowed her pace to see what their ignominious companions decided to do. She motioned for Tara to be on her guard while chancing a glance behind them, seeing that the three men were indeed following them. The rain soaked through all of their clothing as it came down even harder, the cold creeping into their bones just like the building tension. There weren't many people out, and where they were in the corner of the parking lot was mostly deserted. One car stood alone with its lights off and no movement inside. A lonely street lamp peered down on them through the pervasive pounding of precipitation that now flooded the parking lot in large pools. The light glinting off the puddles made the blacktop look like shimmering liquid glass rippling with the percussion of the rain. The girls came to a stop and turned to face the three men following them. The men, if you could call them that, halted just within the illumination of the lamp. Two of the lads were rather tall with brown hair, similar pointed facial features, gangly arms and legs, and a build which likely placed them as brothers or at least of some familial relation. The third was a bit shorter, stocky, with blonde hair, and would have been considered handsome except for that churlish smirk on his face, an expression which spoke of veiled cruelty. There was something to him that told Gemma he was the type to take pleasure in causing pain, likely the type who would stick a cat in the microwave just to see what would happen. The other two lads were clearly his lackeys and would defer to him in any complicated situation, for their ability to think was definitely impaired by their general lack of mental acuity. None could be a day over 20, and each had a look in their eyes that was malicious, malign, and malcontent. Tara had stepped away from Gemma to give each other space for what was about to transpire. Gemma pulled down on the straps of her rucksack to immobilize it and secure it to her body. She thought about the mace and taser, then looked to the lads, then to her sister, and was confident they were not likely to need them. They certainly wouldn't need the knives at their waists. So instead, Gemma studied them as they spread out to surround the girls. The two brown-haired lads moved out from either side of the blonde lad and came towards the sisters. With their hair slicked down their heads, they looked like worn-out mops with noses. The wind blew at their clothes, plastering into their wiry frames like wet sheets blowing on a line. The tallest of the two, the one closest to Gemma, seemed to be limping a bit on his right side. She sensed it was recent and glimpsed an image of him brutally kicking in some man's face and injuring his knee in the process.
"This kid is cruel, but an idiot," Gemma thought. "He can't even give someone a proper beating."
Well, that was okay. She would show him soon enough just how it was done. She could catch the faint scent of booze and cigarettes on his breath. From the delayed movements and the glazed look in their eyes, Gemma could tell they had been drinking quite a bit. This became apparent when the blonde lad spoke with a slur, raising his voice so that it could be heard through the torrential downpour.
"Look at that, lads. Two lovely little lost birds flown from the coop, isn't it? How about we take you under our wings and show you a good time? We'd love to get you out of this nasty weather and cozy up somewhere nice and warm."
He leered at Tara and winked as the other two lads just snickered deviously and moved closer, while the blonde lad stood still, taunting them with his gaze. Gemma didn't really need to hear any more, but thought she would give them a warning, not that they were likely to listen. They never did.
"I see that bilge rats are rather prevalent in these parts. Perhaps it's the rain that has flushed them out," she said to Tara. "But I suggest you rather be on your way before you find out how lovely your little lost birds we can be."
She flashed them a guileful grin, giving them a gracious gift of a warning. But the lad standing closest to Gemma spat back,
"I'm sure you would love to."
She didn't need to hear any more because his tone made their intentions very clear. They likely thought that the two sisters were easy pickings and wouldn't put up much of a fight. Alas, they were sorely mistaken. Gemma flashed forward and Tara, sensing her movement, did the same. Gemma kicked out, catching the mop-headed lackey directly on the inside of his wounded knee. With a cry of pain, he dropped down to his knees. She stepped in close as his head descended forward and brought her knee up, slamming it directly into the center of his face. She could feel the crunch of his nose as he reeled back, splashing with a thud and hitting the paving hard. No words exited his mouth, just soft gurgling sounds as he clutched at his ruined nose. Gemma thought when it healed, it would likely be an improvement. While Tara was a fair bit shorter than her assailant, she surged forward and with unerring precision swept the lanky legs out from under the stunned lad. She knocked him backwards, and before he could even hit the ground, Tara was over him and delivering a hammer fist blow to his temple. His head rebounded off the ground as the rest of his body landed, making him undulate like a worm. The poor lad didn't even cry out because it was over before he knew what hit him. This had all come to pass in less than 20 seconds, and the blonde lad looked quite a bit less confident and dazed by what had just transpired. He stammered out,
"You fucking slags, now you're gonna get it."
He reached behind him, and out from his waist appeared a gun. The girls were momentarily surprised by the sight of a gun on the streets of London, especially in the hand of such a common brute. All the same, it fit. This lad was too much of a coward to not have a backup option, and yet Gemma had thought it would be a knife, not a gun. Well, there it was, a Glock 17 held firmly in his familiar hand. The barrel trained on Tara. The glint of malevolence peering out through pale blue eyes spoke the truth of his intended use. Gemma was still too far away from this maniacal deviant to do anything before he could pull the trigger. Tara stood over the unconscious lackey, probably just as stunned as Gemma to see the gun in his hand. Yet Gemma knew with certainty that if she didn't do anything, this blonde-haired bastard would snuff out her sister's life without a second thought. There are times in fights where things seem to slow drastically, yet what happened next was beyond even that. It was as if time stood still. The rain ceased its gravitational descent like sheets of water caught in a freeze frame. The puddles on the ground, like pockmarked black marbled flesh, perforated with pebbles of precipitation. She could see Tara out of the corner of her eye, frozen with her hand up, telling her to stay where she was. All the sounds seemed to cease, as if she stood in a void of indifference. A fragile yet tranquil, placid bubble, as if the slightest shift in the wrong direction would disturb it, causing reality to cascade back in upon itself and allowing the moment to undulate and unfold like a ripple in space-time. Like a pebble, when it strikes the water, but instead of hitting a shore, it ripples out into eternity, releasing all the tension of that moment like a backlash into the present. So without further thought other than that of her sister's safety, she pushed through the malaise. The resistance was abundant at first, but when she focused her intention and will upon her need, she surged forward, and those 30 feet became one step. With that, the backlash came with a forceful snap, placing her right in front of the blonde lad already in motion. In one deft movement, she simultaneously placed one hand on the barrel of the gun, turning it inward towards his body and away from her sister, while placing the other hand on the inside of his right wrist and twisted. As his wrist broke, the gun flew from his hand like a fly flicked from the air, his face twisted with shock and stunned disbelief. Gemma smoothly stepped forward and in the same motion caught the lad under the chin with her elbow. The strike was so forceful that it lifted him off his feet, the sound of his jaw shattering like a gunshot, shooting him several feet backwards, falling to sprawl like a rag doll on the ground, spraying up water as he landed in a large puddle. Only then did Gemma notice that all the lights were flickering in the Sainsbury's and the sole streetlight overhead had shattered. casting the parking lot in a garish half-light, flickering with the ever-persistent shadows as they tried to snuff out the remaining luminosity. Gemma turned towards her sister, who stared in astonishment and was still standing over her fallen foe. Just then, Gemma glimpsed amongst the flickering lights in the parking garage a man cloaked in shadows peering out from under the brim of a fedora, leaning against a pillar and dragging on a cig. She could not see his face nor his eyes, but knew that it was he she had seen before, and knew in that moment that he had witnessed all that had come to pass in this odd corner of Bexley. Then just like that, the lights came back on in earnest, and he was gone, once again vanishing like an apparition swallowed back into the darkness from whence he came. It was then that sound came crashing back in on Gemma. Coming out of her shell shock, a cacophony of noises accosted her ears with fervor. The pierce of sirens and shouts coming from the other side of the building shot off a warning in her mind to flee. Just then, Tara rushed forward and grabbed Gemma's shoulders and said, "What was that? Never mind. There's no time. We got to get out of here." With that, they were both legging it away from the sirens and into the ever-prevailing night, chasing shadows through the cascading rain and into the deepening darkness.